the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 296. On the podcast today, Lincoln Moore, executive director of Decal Oil, DKL ticker. And he'll be chatting about the well-received results they put out today. Share price up by 10%. Open gap up, which is quite nice. And he also explains how it's only going to get better over the next few years. Also on the podcast, Nicola Duke, the Duchess of the Chart. Technical analysis extraordinaire. We're looking at Decal Oil. Charting that, Jersey Oil and Gas, and Ashmore. Plus, have the micro macro news and the broker forecast. And this podcast is dedicated to Michael from Edinburgh, who gave me a 5-star rating and nice review on iTunes. Really do appreciate that, Michael. And I'll read that out later at the end of the podcast there. And this podcast is dedicated to you, Michael. You can take it away, show it to all your friends. You know what I'm saying? It's free of charge. Just because you dedicated that to me, I'll dedicate this to you. And if you want a podcast dedicated to you, go there, give me a 5-star rating and review, and I'll do the same. But first, I got married on the weekend, you know, so I had time to slip out a blog post, just about. But do you know what? It nearly didn't happen. It came to the point where, you know, the point in the service where they say, if anyone here knows why any lawful impediment why these two shouldn't be wed in holy matrimony, please speak up now. And I turned around at that point and I said, come on, fellas, help me out. And everyone laughed, and the registrar sort of give a little smile, I think, but I was a bit scared, but legally I'd done the wrong thing, I thought. But it was only a joke, but I really enjoyed it. But like, it was a big night, and it was a cracking ceremony. I really did enjoy it, but like I said, I was a bit underwater. I still feel a bit groggy now, because it was a big Saturday night. I didn't go to bed till the wee hours, but it was a cracking time. But like I said, I did on the Sunday manage to knock out a blog post, send to my email list, my subscribers, on three small companies that I think have a big future. Now, one of those companies was Asia Met. ARS ticker. I've talked about these before. I really like them. And tomorrow on the podcast, I've got Tony Minini, one of the big guys, the top guys there behind Asia Met. And if you'd like to ask any questions whatsoever to Tony, I'll put them to him. Then just go to sharepickers.com, click on the link, and you can submit a question. And also at sharepickers.com, you can click the link to read that article called Three Small Companies with Big Futures. But I would advise you to sign up to the newsletter I send out once a week. It's free of charge, and hopefully you'll get some value from that. So just go to sharepickers.com and just sign up there, your first name and your email address. That's all you need. Joining me on the podcast right now is Lincoln Moore, who is executive director at Decal Oil. Did I say that correctly, Lincoln?
It's Decal Oil, Justin.
Decal Oil. Okay. Ticker code is DKL for anyone listening. Now, Lincoln, take us through. I know the results are there, your interim results, received very well by the market. I was checking your stock a few minutes ago, up by 10%, which is quite a lot. In fact, looking on the chart, it sort of gapped up. It opened up higher. So obviously received very well. But before we go into the results, for someone brand new listening that have never heard of your company, take us through exactly what you do, please.
Yeah, no problem, Justin. We're a palm oil producing company listed on AIM. We own 51% of the asset in Côte d'Ivoire, so that's where our business is located. To English, it's Ivory Coast. Mm-hmm. We have 49% partner, which is a Singapore-based company. And as I said, we produce palm oil. So we listed in March 2013, and at that time we commenced constructing our 60-tonne per hour palm oil mill, which is a very large-scale mill. It can produce up to 70,000 tonnes of crude palm oil per year. Crude palm oil is a soft commodity. It's used predominantly in the food industry. It's a basic requirement. It's used in vegetable oils, butters, biscuits, chocolates. Well, pretty much many items you purchase every day from the supermarket. So once we had the mill up and running, it was really about, I guess, getting our production to lift. And our import to our mill is mostly coming from thousands of small farmers which are located in the vicinity of the mill. And they provide us with the raw product, which is called a fresh fruit bunch from their palm oil estates. And we turn that fresh fruit bunch into two products at the moment. One is crude palm oil, and one is the kernels, which is like a nut. And we sell those products at the factory gate to refineries who take the product and then in turn into the types of products that I was referring to earlier for sale in supermarkets.
Marvellous stuff. Now, you're right. If you look on any, on the back of any food stuff, pretty much, most stuff, it's quite surprising. You will see palm oil listed there, won't you? And it's surprising, you know, how many products you'll find it. But let's look at the results today, because it looks fantastic. I mean, you've got six-monthly figures represent a 53% increase in the tonnage produced. And how have you done this? How have you improved production so much over 6 months?
A combination of factors. In 2014, it was really our first year of operation. So you can imagine it takes some time to bed in things like your logistics and really one simple thing is just confidence from the smallholders selling to us that we're a partner that they can rely on to get paid and all those simple types of things. But that confidence obviously was gained pretty quickly. And then we set about setting up a logistics framework, which made it very easy for smallholders to deliver their product to us, which was a number of logistics hubs located around the mill site in which they could deliver the product to those hubs and then we take it to the mill. So they're really the two drivers. And as you said, in our first year in 2014, we produced just over 14,000 tonnes of crude palm oil for the year. We actually exceeded that entire year production in April this year. So the first 4 months of 2015, we surpassed that. And by the six-month period, we produced around about 22,000 tonnes of crude palm oil. That equates to revenue of about 12.9 million euros and EBITDA of about 2.3 million. So it's our first really meaningful profit result, but plenty more to come, given our mill is still only operating at about 50% capacity.
Right, wow, yeah. So at the moment, like I said, you're still operating at a loss, even though you're turning over 12.9 million euros, which, like you said, but it's an eightfold increase in EBITDA. So what needs going forward, how will you improve profitability?
Yeah, the major thing that's happening at the moment is we are installing a kernel crushing plant. So when I was referring to the fact that we sell crude palm oil and the kernels, instead of selling those kernels now, we will be crushing the kernels, which produces two products. One is palm kernel oil, which you find it's a more premium refined vegetable oil, which is used a lot in the cosmetics and industrial industries. And the second product is an animal feed, which is used predominantly in cattle farming. So that kernel crushing plant will start operations in Q4. We'll see a little bit of the results from it this year, but next year we think that plant on its own can add around about 2.5 million EBITDA in itself, in addition to the growing EBITDA from the first mill. So that's the major plank of growth in revenue and profitability coming forward. But of course, you know, we'll be aiming to continue to increase our basic production from our crude palm oil mills. So if we end up this year producing somewhere like 30 to 35,000 tonnes of crude palm oil, we'll be looking to grow that perhaps up to 20% next year as well.
Now, of course, you know, all commodity prices have been hit massively. It's, you know, the oversupply of oil, and also now you've got the worry about the Chinese economy. How is crude palm oil, handling the commodity smash down in prices? Is it standing up well, or is it like crude oil?
It's like all commodities. It's actually been impacted quite heavily, and I think first point really is, yeah, we produced 2.3 million EBITDA, irrespective of obviously weak palm oil prices. So the price at the moment would be at the lowest level since 2009. So it bodes well that we can act in a profitable manner through that sort of period. But we have a couple of advantages over other producers. One is we sell our crude palm oil at a premium, roughly averaging so it's sort of between 7 to 10%. And that's because in our local market, the demand for our product from the refineries greatly outstrips the supply. So we can pass on a premium price. And also because the input, the fresh fruit bunch from the smallholders, the price we pay for that is linked to the international palm oil price. So when the palm oil price has dropped as it is at the moment, then we share that drop with the farmers. So we take some of the pain and they take some of the pain. I mean, where are we heading is, I guess, the key logical next question. I think at the moment you've pretty much got every possible factor working against crude palm oil prices. You've got on the demand side, as you mentioned, China or speculation of China's slowdown being the second largest purchaser of palm oil. You've got the high season at the moment for crude palm oil production in Southeast Asia in full swing. And then on the supply side of things, the main substitute for crude palm oil is soya. And off the back of higher palm oil prices and soy prices last year, there were record soy plantings this year. But that will likely come back out of the market with prices at this level. So we think that one or more of these factors will reverse. And what we've seen in the past is after a tough period for palm oil prices, that they rebound quite strongly, because you have to remember it is a absolute basic food requirement. So the demand always remains strong, irrespective of any particular issues in terms of global stability.
Yeah, so I'm looking on a website here, and there's forecasts of you becoming profitable next year. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, we'll produce this year EBITDA for the year this year. We should sit around 4 to 4.5 million euros, and net profit after tax will be it should be a little bit better than break even. No doubt next year we will see a further improvement. Just simply the crude palm oil crushing plant will add another 2.5 million of EBITDA, so we should be at least 6 million euros EBITDA next year, plus any growth from our normal crude palm oil production. We will be, we're in a good position now, because once we've entered this profitable period, one of the things that's the difference between EBITDA to net profit after tax is our interest payments, which are, quite heavy, because the interest on the loans we struck were done well before the plant was operational. So the interest, reflected the higher risk factor in the business. But now we've got a stable profitability, we can refinance those loans on much preferred terms. So it'll be, something that we're striving for in the back half of this year to get that refinancing done and free up cash flow. So we're in a very nice position.
Yeah, well, it's quite nice to hear that, because even, like I said, we're at the bottom of the economic cycle for commodities, and you still have a positive outlook. And so I think you're right. We are at the moment at the worst period you can be for any commodity producer. And so, you're still positive about the future, which is quite nice. And talking about sort of finances there, I mean, with all AIM companies, what most private investors fear is the raising of funds via placings and all this stuff. Are you going to be in the market for raising any money via equity?
No, we're in terms of our cash position, we're as I said, we're an EBITDA positive producing company, so we don't need working capital fundraisings to keep us alive. We've been there and done that. We will simply be growing the profit. But as I say, there's a lot of organic growth to come, given we're only currently producing at 50% of our mill's capacity, plus the kind of crushing plant coming on board. So profits will continue to rise. And in fact, we're probably looking or aiming for the reverse of that. And at the end of 2016, we're striving, or one of our goals is to perhaps move towards a dividend.
Wow, that sounds all good. And I'm just looking at the share price on the chart here, and it does seem, I don't know if you have a look at charts or technical analysis, but I'm a little bit into it, and it does seem like the 1p seems like a really strong support level, and you are up by 10% today since 1.1. So, for now, even it looks like if people do invest, that all-important 1p level is a nice little support level, isn't it, for your company at the moment?
It definitely is. I think, we traded in a range of, I guess, from 1p up to around about 1.5p. So we would be at the bottom of that range at the moment. I think, the main reason why I think we'd probably move back down towards the bottom is because the crude palm oil price has come off. So, obviously our production is lifted dramatically. So that's obviously tremendously positive and will continue to be. But, the pricing at 1p is a nice level to get into. I mean, just to give you an idea, if we were running our figures off last year's crude palm oil prices, our EBITDA that we aiming for this year, 4 to 4.5, we would have been something like 7 to 8, and any analyst would have us trading at north of 2p on the back of those numbers. So an investor can feel quite comfortable the downside risk to this company now is almost gone completely, because it is profitable. It can look after itself during any more difficult period, but we'll thrive tremendously once we see any improvement in the palm oil price.
Marvellous. So as far as going forward now, I mean, you mentioned a couple of things happening, but so where are sort of time frame wise the sort of milestones you're looking to get past now?
I think in terms of announcements in the next few months, and then there'll be a quarterly production announcement out at the end of September, showing our production during what's just been the low season, which we think is going to be another pleasing announcement. We're certainly, as I said, focused on now improving our balance sheet position and freeing up cash, which can be either used for investing in our second project. We have a second project in a different region of Côte d'Ivoire, which is a 24,000 hectare land position, which we would be keen to start on. So we're trying to free up cash for that, and also perhaps a blend with a dividend towards 2016. But the real low-hanging fruit and real growth, I think, will be from the kernel crushing plant starting operations at the back end of this year. That in itself, with 2.5 million EBITDA expected from that plant in 2016, almost underpins our entire stock price at the moment, without looking at what our core business is at the moment. So we think that once the market starts to understand that and we move into the next high season, which runs from March to June, we're going to have a nice period of growth, and that should be reflected in the share price.
And where would you? I know it's impossible to pin down a share price target. Even the brokers try; they never get it right. But where would you like to see? Where would you be happy? Realistically, see the share price sitting. Where would you be happy hitting? What price?
But as I was saying, I think if the palm oil prices were what they were last year, this year we would be pushing towards 2p. In terms of 2016, if we even maintain the palm oil prices at these low levels, I think we'll be pushing towards 2p once people start to factor in the 2016 forecasts and see that they're actually being achieved. So, the last capital raise we did was around about October 2014. We raised money at 1.25p. And the board took their options at 2p, and that was because at that point in time, we felt that 2p was the next logical target. So that remains in place, and that's where we're aiming to get to over the next 6 to 12 months.
Well, do you know what? You sound very, bright. You have a bright future ahead of you, even though commodities are hammered, and that's a nice sign. Like I said, I think it's been reflected today in the share price. It's been ticking up nicely, 10%, and hopefully it'll continue that way. Lincoln, it's lovely to chat to you, and by all means, come back on the podcast in a few months' time when you have some more developments.
No, truly, Justin, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, it's time for the micro-macro news. Here's the macro news. Some major UK lenders have returned to selling mortgages to home buyers only able to offer a small deposit. Building Society Nationwide and Bank Santander have just launched mortgage products at 95% loan-to-value. That would require a borrower to come up with a deposit of obviously 5%, which is about 13,850 quid for a typical home. Most mortgages of this kind had needed the support of the government through the Help to Buy scheme, but now some lenders are going it alone. This is the first time the Nationwide has offered this 5% deposit since 2008. So it does show we're going in the right direction, isn't it? Let me just check out. I own Bellway, of course, a house builder. I wonder how they're doing today. They're up. Do you know the market's? Wow. Earlier on, the market was up by 0.5%, and now it's down by 0.5%. But the three stocks I talked about, like I said in my newsletter, are up today strongly. Bellway is up by 0.5%, which shows up to 26. God, it's flying. Bellway is flying. I bought that, I think, about 17 or 18 quid. They're now £26 a share. Nice, I like. So that's good news for the housing economy there. Joining me on the podcast right now is the Duchess of the Chart. It's Nicola Duke. You're right, Nick.
Hey, yes, very well, thanks.
Good. I'm feeling a little bit tired, a little bit underwater, because I had a bit of a heavy night Saturday, of course, because I got married.
No, congratulations. The pictures look so lovely.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan of marriage, because when I said off air last week, you said, don't do it.
I did. I was the only one that told you not to do it. Yeah. That's naughty, isn't it?
Well, no, you know what? You and the guy I work with, he's really anti-marriage, and he's been with his partner for 14 years, and he tried his best for the last, like, since I've, about 3 months, it was quite short notice. For the last 3 months since I announced it, he's been trying to dissuade me from doing it. But it's done now. You know, it's all done and dusted. And it doesn't feel any different apart from me wearing a ring. I hate jewellery. I never wear jewellery. And this one ring is just getting on my nerves a little bit. I don't know if I'll keep it. I don't know. Anyway, let's move on to more important things, which is stocks and everything. So what have you got? I sent you a couple of ideas there. You've got one to suggest yourself.
I found it really hard to find any charts I like today, which is not terribly inspiring. And remember, you know, the second half of September seasonally is not usually very good.
Isn't it?
Indexes, according to the Stock Almanac. Okay. Which goes back to 1950.
So, yeah, so September, isn't it one of the worst months of the year?
It's the second worst month. August is the worst month.
August, okay. So we're going through the two worst. So if we can get through these 2 months, we're fine. Yes. You know, and of course, it's odd, isn't it, how the worries come out in these months anyway. Like, we've got this Chinese problem, which has been with us for a long time, really. But it almost seems to get amplified and magnified when, you know, the stock market's having a bit of a wobble. Everyone seems to focus on bad news.
They are, and everybody has got a little bit bearish very quickly, so I'm rather hoping that that means we'll see a bit of a squeeze higher from here.
Yeah, well, let's hope, hopefully. But do you know what? I sent out a newsletter yesterday to people subscribe to my newsletter, and the three stocks I recommend, well, I didn't recommend, I like, I said, because their management, penny stocks are all up quite strongly today, which is quite nice, which is SEB Resources or CEB Resources, Asia Met. In fact, they're on the podcast tomorrow. I have Tony from Asia Met's on the podcast. If you want to ask a question, then click the link I tweeted out. And also Metal Tiger, all up, which is quite nice, isn't it? But let's go with the stock what you're looking at. Nick, what you got there?
Okay, the first one... let's go through the ones you sent me at the moment.
Yeah.
The first one is Jersey Oil and Gas.
Yes, a lot of people, it's hard to get, I couldn't get a good chart on this, but it's very popular amongst, you know, private investors.
I can only chart this back to the 17th of August. Is that when it was started?
Or? Yeah, well, it's going to a shell now. It was obviously an oil and gas company. They're now restructuring the company and looking to do something else, and they've got a bit of cash there. And there's very few shares in issue, about 8 million, I think, something ridiculous small. But yes, it's split then. But 100 to 1. But yeah, so I can't get much of a chart on it, but I'm looking at this. They're placing it, I think, 22 pence. So it's now below the placing price because it's at about 19.25 pence. So I don't know. What can you take from this? There's limited amount.
Right. So the opening price I've got is 19.5.
Yeah.
And we're below that, which is not. It's a bit ominous, to be quite honest. Mm. But very, very good support if it dips to 17.
Okay, and how are you looking? Is that Fibonacci?
Fibonacci, yeah.
All right, Fibonacci.
Fibonacci at 17.
Yeah.
I know. Otherwise, yeah, I don't think it'll go down. But yeah, very good support. It might, you know, it's having a bit of a bullish day. If it can recover 19.5 and close above it again, I think that we can say that we've got a good chance of a bottom. So set a price alarm or keep an eye on it. If it closes back above 1950, then yeah. I think we can say it's bottomed.
Okay, cool.
So good support at 17. Watch it if it gets there and otherwise back above 19.5.
Okay, cool. Well, I will look at it. I do want to put an alert on it right now. In fact, I put it at 18. So if it gets there, I know I'm in the field of play because I'm not particularly looking out for any more stocks at the moment. So I'm pretty much fully invested. But I just noticed the stock market, it started off very bullish this morning. It's now turned negative. We're up by 1 point, I think. Half of 1% up, and now it's down 0.2 of a percent.
This is a very tricky week. It's options expiration.
Yeah.
So it's triple witching at the end of the week. So, and it's also, you know, the 2-day Fed meeting, which I really, you know, don't know that people are going to do too much until they hear what the Fed is going to do.
Yeah.
So we might have to wait until Wednesday, Thursday.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So it's
one of those weeks where I sit back, make some popcorn, and watch the action, and then do something next week.
I'll do that every day. I'll just sit back and make some popcorn. Cool.
So we see some fireworks.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. So the next one I sent you was. Decal Oil. Decal Oil, yes. In fact, the guy on the podcast today, the executive director, who's a guy called Lincoln Moore, is on the podcast today along with you. So I thought, why not look at the chart, because they've had some results out today. Very positive. The revenue is a lot higher, and their tonnage of their palm oil is going forward. So what do you see, the chart on this? What do you look at?
Yeah, you know, I had a couple of little dodgy weeks where we went sideways, sort of in an area around, you know, just below 195 down to 95, where we've got really good support before. You know, if you look back to the start of the year and last December, November, December, 99 was really good support, you know, right through February. So we found support there again, and we've gapped higher, but we banged our head at resistance at 115. I would say if it comes back to fill the gap, or tries to fill the gap, or any way back to one, then you could give it a go. But it's got to clear 115 if it's got any chance of going higher. And if it does, then it's got really nice upside potential to at least 145 from here.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It is amazing. I did just bang his head. It opened at the highest point, didn't it, today?
Yes, and it certainly did.
Yeah, and then it's and drifted back a bit. It's still 10% up, but it's still, you know, drifted back a little bit there, which is...
That's just really untradeable when it does that, you know, when it gaps into resistance and then just...
Yeah. Do you know what? A line from the open today across, you can see there's a huge amount of... old support, which is now obviously resistance, and it's having problems getting above that. Yeah, you're right. So wait and, what do you say, wait and see a little bit, see where it goes, you reckon?
No, I mean, I think it should find support around 103 down to 99, and okay. And then when it does, have a go.
Yeah, well, talking to Lincoln there, the executive director, the company is on the up. I mean, they're expanding, and the revenues are getting better, and they said they will be refinancing a finance deal they have, which is quite expensive at the moment. It's cost them a lot of money in interest rate-wise, so he said that'll be, at the end of the year, will be... because they're more profitable now, they can refinance that at a more favourable rate for them, so it'll cost them less, so they'll be more profitable. So, okay, so that's good. And the last one you will liked, or sort of liked, because you said there wasn't a lot out
there.
I found
it very hard to find anything, but I do see some nice signs of potentially bottoming in Ashmore, which is ASHM.
ASHM, yes. Yes, now these are fund managers in the emerging market space, aren't they? And they've been hammered recently. They've gone from like a 6-month chart I'm looking at, from over 340 down to pretty much 240. But it looks like they're forming some kind of bottom here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. So I think they're going sideways, waiting for the Fed. Now, if the Fed do not hike this week, that's very positive for emerging markets. And so this is a really nice stock play for this one. I would be a buyer at 261.50 or above. So if it breaks basically yesterday's high or this morning's high, it's got a really nice kind of wedge formation. You know, but remember, if the Fed do hike, it will absolutely kill this. So might be better to sit and wait, but this is definitely one to watch. Nice signs of bottoming.
Okay, would you like to attempt to explain why, if the dollar goes up, it's bad for emerging markets?
Okay, an awful lot of these emerging market countries, you know, when they did QE, it was boom, and they all borrowed in dollars. All their debt is denominated in dollars. Mm-hmm. So if the Fed hike rates, the dollar goes up, so their debt basically becomes way more expensive. And that's, you know, apart from, you know, global growth is kind of, and global trade is teetering a bit. That's the reason that emerging markets are so jittery about the Fed decision.
Yeah. Well, do you think Janet Yellen there will be, you know, wary of that or not, or she doesn't care?
Do you know, I've been so determined. I don't know why I'm wavering. I really didn't think that there was any chance that the Fed would hike. And I actually thought it was dumb to talk about it. But, you know, they've talked about it so long. I now think it's just 25 basis points. Let's just get it over with and do it, you know. Markets hate uncertainty. They hate this. I really think we should get it out of the way now.
Yeah, I know this is saying...
the same with the BOE.
Yeah.
There's no reason for all this talking about it endlessly for 12 months before you do it and putting everybody on edge.
Yeah, but I suppose, but there again, the argument is, if I'm being devil's advocate, is that they want to make sure, because, you know, if you do start hiking, then they very rarely brought them back down, do they, quickly? So if it does start to choke off the resurgence in the economies, then, you know, they don't want to see that happen, do they? So they want to be... positive, absolutely positive that they're hiking at the right time and the economy is strong enough to take it. Because, and I think, isn't it touchy feely? See how you go, see how the figures come out. Because if they just set a date willy nilly without even thinking about it, but I'm sure they could say by now, if these figures are the same as this in 3 months' time, we will be definitely hiking. They could say that, I suppose, couldn't they? You know,
If they don't, that there's a very good chance if things continue to go well that they will in December. But in the BOE, I think everyone's. You know, there are all these economists who worry about jobs, so then they don't want to be the ones that screw up and make a mistake.
Yeah.
And if you look at what happened since 2009, all the countries that did, like Sweden, the Riksbank, that did hike when they saw things recovering potentially, then had to go back and cut again. So they don't want to be the ones that have to do that.
Yeah, because basically that's admitting they've got it wrong, isn't it? You know, they hike early enough
and
put it back.
And then they don't get their fancy investment bank job afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. So we're not going to trust you. You can't even get it. But you sat there for like, how many years has it been now since we had it? Since 2009, isn't it? So 6 years.
When Comrade Corbyn gets selected to win, then he's going to abolish the BOE, so we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Wow. Cool. On that bombshell. Thanks, Nick. And are you able to send me some charts?
Got a few years to wait for that.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if it'll ever come, will it? Let's be honest. Because they're very vocally supporters, but are there many of them? You know, how many are?
The more the media bash him, and I've never seen bashing like it, the more people think, well, there must be something good about him. So
yeah.
I think they should leave him alone.
Yeah. Marvellous, Nicola. Lovely to speak to you. And you can follow Nick and at Nick Trades on Twitter. I'll put the link on sharepickers.com where you can also see.
Be careful, everybody, this week. Seriously, be careful.
Yeah. Do you mean generally crossing the road and everything? Or just mean
markets.
In the markets? Right, okay, cool.
This week.
But also be careful crossing the road because you never know, you know?
Exactly.
Exactly. Cheers, Nick.
Bye.
Okay, here's the micro news. Here is the good news. Shares in Motive Television surged. Whoosh! After the independent TV producer unveiled plans to make its tablet TV product available on Apple TV. Protection Solutions, Chemring, reiterated full-year expectations after reporting a sharp rise in revenue. Shares in Decal Oil, which I had to earlier, Lincoln, jumped today as the Palm Oil Development Group said its production in the first half of the year reached record levels. Shares in Water Intelligence gushed higher. I didn't write that. After the leak detection company's strong interim results showed encouraging sales and profits growth. Norricum Gold posted a narrower pre-tax loss for the 6 months of the same period last year. As it said, investment case has never been stronger. Nice. Trading Emissions said an arbitration tribunal has found in favour of the company and dismissed two claims against it amounting to €6 million. That's good. Active Energy has entered into a joint venture agreement with Utah-based Biomass Energy Enhancements to exclusively commercialise a new clean energy biomass fuel and manufacturing process. Spru Aegis posted a big jump in first half pre-tax profits as revenue more than doubled. And in fact, a while back, someone suggested Spru Aegis to me. Well, a long time ago, when I first started the podcast, I think. It's a good call there, fellas. Shares in Weatherly International jumped after the miner lifted production guidance for its Tshuti mine in Namibia. And that's Tshuti. Here's the bad news. Shares in Heikki Chemical tumbled after the specialty chemical business said it was at risk of not achieving a profit for the full year in 2015. That's not good when you're at risk of not getting a profit. Mining giant Glencore said the company operating the Katanga mining project in the Democratic Republic of Congo will suspend production at the site for 18 months. And shares in Arga Rangemaster tumbled at the open after Whirlpool said late on Friday that it does not intend to make an offer for the company. And here are the broker forecasts. Here's the upgrades. XN BNP Paribas has upgraded Relex to outperform price target 12 quid. Deutsche Bank has upgraded AstraZeneca. That's AstraZeneca. To buy price target 57 quid. And Jefferies International has upgraded BHP Billiton, which I'm a holder of, to buy price target 13 quid. Nice to see an upgrade there. Because let's be honest, not a lot of good news coming out about this China and commodities, are there at the moment? Here are the downgrades. Finn Capital, having said that, on the weekend or on the Friday, International Energy Agency did say that the supply of oil from North America will see its biggest fall since 2009 next year. That's that's obviously good news for the oil price. FinCap has downgraded Sky Pharma to hold price target £3.55. And Jefferies International has downgraded Antofagasta to hold price target £6.40. And this podcast is dedicated to Michael from Edinburgh, who gave me a 5-star rating and this review on iTunes. Now listen, I've got 86 5-star reviews on iTunes. I want to try and get to 100. So if you listen to the podcast and you listen to it for a while and quite like it, then please, please, by all means, go to iTunes, give me a review. It's not easy to find. That's the trouble. If you go there, open up iTunes, select ADVFN and search that in the search box. And you'll see titles, I think, like podcast, and it'll say the ADVFN podcast, and you can click on that, and that's where you can submit a review. It's not easy. But if you do it, I dedicate a podcast to you. Like Michael right now. Michael, this is podcast 296, episode 296, and it's yours to take away and show all your friends, you know what I'm saying? Keep it up, you say, 5 stars. Spud74 is your username. Cheers, Justin. Been investing over the last 2 years, and your podcasts, guests, and reading tips gave me greater knowledge, and therefore I'm becoming a greater investor. That's nice. That is nice. I'm glad I help in some way, because some would suggest I hinder. I listen while in front of ShareScope or walking the dog. I'll most likely change from ShareScope to ADVFN. Keep it up, and thank you. Michael in Edinburgh. Michael, thank you, fella. Muchos apreciados. Don't forget, please, don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation on the podcast, as it's only just opinion. Please, do your own research, as it's your own money. Thanks for listening. Oh, don't forget, tomorrow, Tony Manini from Asia Met is on the podcast. So please, if you'd like to submit a question for Tony, then click the link at sharepickers.com, and I could be reading it out to Tony, the man himself, who has a stellar CV. Check it out. Also, go to sharepickers.com and read my blog post from yesterday. That's it. Thanks for listening. Speak tomorrow.
The ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.